Everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Anisha coming to you live
every day and talking about HR with the people who love it. So let's get to our guest. She has got probably one of the best case studies I've ever heard in person, and that intrigues me because she's always got good things to say. Lisa Johnson, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Brian, thank you. I'm still singing Sublime from the intro song.
Yeah, you know, I've got a little bit of the Sublime rocking too, so I totally empathize with you. So if you would, introduce yourself to our Drive Through HR family, and we'll get into the big question after that.
Absolutely. So I am Lisa Johnson. I am currently the Director of Recruitment for North America for Gate Gourmet. And in case you've not heard of Gate Gourmet, we are the leader in airline catering. So chances are, you know, the next time you take a flight and you are privileged enough to actually get a meal on your flight, it was more than likely serviced by Gate Gourmet. And even if it wasn't food and you just got some Pringles or sodas, we are also supplying those as well.
Oh, very good. Well, what is top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Well, you know, you had mentioned, and I appreciate the kudos, on the case study that we presented, earlier this summer, regarding analytics and how we've used that to kind of transform the recruitment processes, if you will. And that's really what I wanted to kind of focus on today, was how not only Gate Gourmet has done it, but how others can use the recruitment, the data analytics, some other strategic ways to really kind of take the role of a recruiter or the role of a talent acquisition professional to the next level.
Oh, that's great content. I was lucky enough to see Chris Hoyt do a presentation a couple months back. I think it was in June, and he had kind of a wonderful take on recruiting analytics. So let's kind of dive right into it. If you walked into a firm and they didn't have anything, it was just kind of all of a mess, what are the kind of the key metrics to kind of get control over and then get some visibility into? What are the key metrics for talent acquisition professionals?
Well, I think the first key before you even dive into the analytics piece is understanding your business and what drives your business. What gaps do you have in your business, and how can you use those analytics, you know, to solve some of those problems? Because, you know, what may work for me and may be a challenge for me, and quite honestly, at Gate Gourmet, it's different city to city. So what is a problem for me in San Francisco is a very different problem for me in Washington Dulles. So it's understanding what business drivers you need and what's kind of causing that analytic, you know, how we would use those analytics. Then once you figure that out, you know, it's, okay, where do we start? I think if I remember the actual number, per each candidate, 2,520 fields of data per every candidate that we had in our applicant tracking system. So understanding, you know, knowing your business drivers and then understanding where you take it from there as regards to, you know, maybe it's geography, maybe it's compensation, maybe it's a combination. How far, based on your analytics, are persons willing to drive at different salary levels? Oftentimes for us, it comes down to a geography of where they live based on public transportation. So that's taking, you know, your applicant tracking analytics and then cross-referencing them with, you know, public transportation analytics and looking at those and studying to see how you can get the best candidate in the door, keep them in the door based on some of the data that's available to you.
You know, I was arguing with somebody the other day. First of all, that's what I do. I argue with people about really benign shit like war for talent. And I was arguing with somebody the other day about the war for talent. And really, the war for talent has been going on since you hired your first person. So
right.
Back when cavemen first hired their first person, there began the war for talent. And certain industries and certain jobs and certain areas, there's always a war because it's scarcity. So there's always a war for talent. So take us into kind of your nuanced war for talent. What's the hardest positions for you to hire?
Well, see, and what, you know, War for talent is what makes a good recruiter get up in the morning, because that's what excites us, is how do we find that purple squirrel or that needle in a haystack, all those terms that we use, because that's what drives us. Otherwise, if that didn't drive you, you really probably should find another profession. And I think, you know, when it comes to kind of what we're looking for and how we're fighting for that talent, our biggest challenge, number one, is our primary challenge is really, quite honestly, our branding. We're not a consumer brand. You know, our customer is the airline. The airline passenger doesn't know or doesn't really care, or doesn't know how that food got on their plane. And sometimes, and don't chuckle, is, you know, when people think airline food, they think, oh my gosh, that's gross, I don't want to eat it. So it's a negative, for some it's even a negative connotation anyway. So it's overcoming that and really saying, how do we find the right talent for our business to really help us change that perception? And that could come anywhere from culinary excellence and getting, you know, some of the top chefs in the country. We have some amazing talented chefs on our team who really have helped us take that cuisine to the next level. Because, again, it's not just cuisine that you could find in your local, you know, restaurant down the street. There are different things that we have to do to the food for them to, you know, for it to be prepared correctly on the aircraft. So there's a whole other dynamic that goes into that. And when, you know, when chefs graduate from culinary school, they're not, their glamour role is not to go into airline catering. So, you know, hiring those persons who really want to make a difference in our industry, it can be a real challenge. We've got folks who, from a technology perspective, we build technology that supports the handheld that the flight attendant uses. And lots of times, again, when someone is, you know, a developer or a software architect, you know, they want to go work, you know, for something glamorous. They want to go work for Microsoft or, you know, somebody who's a startup who's innovating new products. They don't think, oh, let me go work for airline catering. So it's finding that person, again, who can open their minds up to the industry and the impact that we really can have at the end of the day.
Well, you mentioned employment branding. Glassdoor received, I think, a Series E of, I think it was $50 million yesterday. And obviously, they tinker around in the employment branding space. What's your take on Glassdoor? What's your kind of a, if you were to have a take, what would it be on Glassdoor and employment brand?
I'm trying to be politically correct with my answer because.
Best of luck with
Glassdoor is a powerful website, and quite honestly, I think it's too powerful of a website. Human nature, you complain when you're angry, you know, quick to criticize, slow to glorify positive. So it's just human nature that when you have a website like that where you can be anonymous, you're going to complain. But customers still and candidates still really rely upon that information. I'll be honest, it's been a challenge for us in overcoming that. So we've kind of gone to the next level and said, okay, let's build something that none of our competitors have in the industry as a Facebook page. So I can finally start pushing out some positive content, because I refuse to give Glassdoor any of my money to buy, you know, the job postings to then hopefully improve my brand. I'd rather be able to try to control it myself. So that's probably the best political answer I can give you, because it's too powerful. I'd rather use something that, like Indeed has a review piece, which I think is more positive, because then it's someone who's truly looking for a role and is being solicited from Indeed from a more positive intent instead of just, you know, here's a website to go and bitch and complain.
Yeah. Yeah, well, with more money, they're on the trajectory to go public now, because those VCs are going to want their money back at one point. So we're probably going to be dealing more and more with Glassdoor, not probably less and less over the future. Let me ask you about mobile recruiting. What's your, you know, and I want to separate some of the hype, you know, around mobile recruiting and kind of the actual, like what you see, candidate flow, et cetera. And I posted on Facebook the other day that Pinch and Zoom is not a mobile strategy. And really, it was a joke. It actually came from, you know, Rand Thorne and I. You know, we were joking about it. So, what's your take on mobile recruiting?
Mobile recruiting, I mean, it is the way of the future, in my opinion. I think most folks would agree with me to some regard. What I found, though, is very few companies, at least in our space, have actually a mobilized site. They think, oh, it's not that big of a deal. You can just go to my site and, you know, apply. I believe there was a story about Harley Davidson who thought, you know, the CEO or a leader of Harley got up and said it was mobilized and then realized that, indeed, it was not. And there's a definite, you know, B2C, you know, B2C brand. For us, it has really revolutionized the way that we can attract candidates because for many of our candidate pool, they don't have computers in their home. For our hourly employees who work in the cities, in the actual facilities that are preparing the food for us, many of them don't have computers in their homes. So we're able to reach them. They can apply directly from their handheld, which last time I checked, we were right around 12% of our hires for 2013 were through mobile recruiting. To me, it's a good number. It's worth my investment.
Yeah. Are you looking at technology investments? Are you looking at the Jibe and the iMomentus and kind of those types of technology spends?
No, not yet. Let's keep in mind we are airline catering. Therefore, we support airline industry with very, very slim margins. I don't have
Fair
a lot.
Enough.
I have to be very selective where I spend my cash.
And I will spend your money left and right. So fair enough. Fair enough. Hey, tell us about what, you know, most of the content that's out there, the ERE's of the world, et cetera, they really focus a lot on the professional recruiting. I would say the not hourly, the salary recruiting kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
Hourly recruiting, there's not as much content out there. So if you don't mind, take us into that world. What's it like to recruit hourly employees?
It is completely different than professional. It is much more transactional. It is... much more, it's not the relationship building. It is high volume, throw the net out to masses, and let's see who we can attract. That's where we've really kind of honed in on our data analytics, and that's what I've talked about a few different times at conferences is how we've been able to use that data to really so target in on specific markets and specific segments of a market to be able to throw that net strategically where we think we can get the best pool of candidates. You know, if I need a developer in Reston, I know where to go. I know exactly where to go in our particular area. But if I need someone who's willing to work for a low hourly wage, unskilled labor position, your pool is pockets of people in communities, pockets of people in different cities kind of scattered amongst. And it is I have a completely different strategy for my for my professional team than we do for our hourly team because it's much more transactional. It's much more numbers driven as opposed to relationships and strategic. It's very different.
Well, it's, you know, I'm thinking about process, I'm thinking about technology, and even the metrics that you would be looking at. If these two dashboards kind of rolled up into one meta dashboard for all of recruiting, what is, and first of all, I just made all that up, but what, is there a different process?
Sounded good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what consultants do. Let's be honest. We make things that we make up sound really, really viable. So is there different technology at play or is there different processes at play?
Yes. Yeah, so for Gate Gourmet, we partner with Pontoon RPO to help us strategy execution perspective. We do use technology in automated screening and automated interview scheduling, which helps us as a company to be able to utilize some of that technology that we ourselves couldn't afford, and quite honestly wouldn't have the infrastructure to be able to run properly. It has helped us take our, you know, candidate pool from, you know, 50,000 down to 500. and using that technology, using the automated piece, using the mobile piece has definitely helped us whittle that net that I described earlier that we throw into a community. It's helped us whittle that down because our employees, not only are they low-skilled hourly labor, they have to pass a drug screen and a background check. So my market, my available pool of candidates is really, really very small based on, compared to a professional talent pool.
Right. Let me ask you about the candidate experience. I mean, obviously, you're reading all the same stuff I am. How much of that for you and your reality is a need to have versus a nice to have?
As it relates to the hourly employee?
As it relates to the hourly employee.
I mean, it's a nice to have for the hourly employee. You know, we want the candidate experience. You know, you always want a positive candidate experience. Don't get me wrong.
True.
You want to have...
Yeah.
Yeah, you always want that to be fluid. But since we are talking about such massive amounts of persons, it's not as critical as it could be for a professional. Because you have one negative candidate experience for a developer in a really small, tight-knit community, that spreads really, really fast like wildfire and can damage your brand very, very, very quickly. And in hourly, you're talking volume. So it's important, of course, but it's not going to spread like wildfire and ruin my candidate pool like it could in a professional target niche market.
Okay. Social recruiting, again, kind of like mobile recruiting, how much of it in your day-to-day is hype versus really, really works for you, viable, et cetera?
Again, I'm probably going to have to answer this politically correctly. It's quite honestly, guys, it's not as much as – it doesn't have the results that some of the traditional marketing could have or does have. The social piece, it's important. It is important to your brand. To me, the social piece is more important to your brand than it is actually recruiting. We finally launched a Facebook page this year, which took, I think it took us longer than it did, Congress to actually pass law to be able to get this implemented. And, we really, yes, it's part of our recruitment strategy, but it's really more of a branding strategy, having that social piece out there. So, again, we have the ability to push out positive content, not only relying upon websites like Glassdoor, and then you look at, all of my recruiters tweet, do we actually get candidates? Do people actually apply and say that their resource was Twitter? I think it's less than 1% of all the people that we hired this year said they heard about us from Twitter. So, but it's still a very positive brand. It's positive to get out there. It's positive to have. You need it. You have to have it. You can't not have it and be successful.
All right, so a lot of what I've been reading about lately is about referrals, and referrals are kind of like, it's in some ways it's like the fountain of youth of HR and recruiting is how do you get more, employee referrals or better referrals or higher quality referrals, et cetera. So I want to kind of dig into that with you with how do they work now for you, how do referrals work, and how should they work in an organization?
And my peers would probably disagree with me when I say this. Employer referrals are as good as your company. You don't need a rewards program, in my opinion, around your employee referral program in order to attract strong employees to refer their friends. I think if employees are happy, they are going to refer their friends no matter if they get $500 or $5,000. They want to, they're happy, they're going to refer other people because they want their friends and their family to also be engaged and enjoy their work. So when it comes to employee referrals, we absolutely advertise. We absolutely hire, and I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but it's around 25% this year from employee referrals, but we don't offer a monetary reward for those employee referrals. Our goal is, again, if you're happy, you're engaged, you're loyal to your brand, then you're going to refer someone into that brand.
And if you're not, you won't.
And then you're not, you won't. I mean, if you were miserable at work, would you really want a friend to be miserable with you? No, you wouldn't. So if you hate your job and you think it sucks, you don't want your friend to come work with you because you wouldn't want them to be miserable.
Right. So, then and they'll hate you for even getting them into the gig. So
exactly,
it gets
worse. You feel guilty because then you leave and go find another job and you're like, oh, man, I left my friend there. I mean,
oh, I know.
You wouldn't do that.
I got an email from a CEO. I recommended a gal for a VP of sales gig. She goes in, she works for 6-7 months, whatever, does a great job. Culturally, she's not a fit. They end up parting ways. And so now I have all of this Catholic guilt around recommending her to the gig. And so, anywho, let me ask you about what you would like, magic wand time, what you would like in terms of recruiters to stop talking about, stop doing, maybe even some metrics you'd like to kill off. But I'd like for you to kill off some concepts now. So what are things that really rub you the wrong way?
So I think – recruiters are a good recruiter. Let me preface. A good recruiter needs to really be prepared to take recruitment and their role in the organization to the next level. I think the future of HR, the future especially of recruitment, is really becoming that strategic partner. And I know that term gets used, it's overused, but really, really thinking to yourself, how can I take this to the next step? I am not just filling a job. So many corporate recruiters, and I'll preface, headhunters totally different, been there, totally different mindset. I'm talking only corporate recruiters. You know, it's really taking and thinking, how can I be strategic? Get rid of time to fill. It's an antiquated metric that quite honestly doesn't show anything, in my opinion. Really get down to more quality of hire, which is a much more – it's a harder statistic to be able to measure. Focus more on the results of and the feedback from your hiring managers instead of just relying upon, again, old traditional time to fill, your cost per hire. Of course, all of those things are important, but it's really taking it to the next step and looking what impact did the person that I not only screened, they hired, what impact did that person make to the business? But to do that, guys, we got to start way back at the beginning. Like, it's so much more than just a metric. It's really a mindset change. It's taking what you know as a profession that, quite honestly, we've all fallen into. Nobody graduated from college thinking they were going to be a recruiter, at least not of my generation. And I don't think they're, you know, we're not teaching, you know, recruitment and candidate selection in business school. So how do we take it back to the very, very beginning and learning and being part of a business operationally, functionally, strategically, to then really make sure that we're hiring the right person for the job and get rid of the antiquated statistics that are really just measuring how quickly you can fill something, how quickly you can do something. It needs to be more about quality and results. I know I'm challenging my team to do that now. We've got some really aggressive things for next year. And we're going to start focusing and measuring on delivery in my hourly world, our delivery to our desired start date. How you said you needed this person, did we get the person that you needed in the time you needed it, and how long did that person stay, and what do we need to do to extend that period of time? So it's getting rid of the old time to fill, which what does that really measure?
You know, it's going to sound really old school to me, but where in our process do we train people on the phone? Because, you know, like we've tried to automate everything out of recruiting, but at the end of the day, it's a gal or a guy on a phone with another gal or guy, and you're convincing. You're listening, you're speaking, you're convincing, you're manipulating, you're cajoling, your opposition, you know, responses. I mean, you're doing all that stuff. Like, where do we teach people that skill?
You know, that is a million-dollar question because we don't teach it anywhere. You know, salespeople are trained. You know, they go to sales training. They learn how to negotiate, and they learn all these, you know, wonderful things and skill sets to use. And recruiters don't get any of that because recruiters could be, oh, well, you're in HR. you know, you're just a part of HR. You just fill my recs. You're a support function. You're this, you're that. When in fact, you know, you guys know this, recruiters are salespeople. We're the face of the organization. We can, in my opinion, we can make or break an organization. You have crappy recruiters, you're going to get crappy results, you're going to have a crappy team. You have stellar recruiters who really kind of learned through experience and learned from others because, you know, there are not textbooks out there on how to be a good recruiter. If you guys want to work on that for your next project, be glad to contribute.
I like how you did that. That's nice. If y'all could just go solve that, that'd be great.
Yeah, if you got, you know, I mean, there's a ton of people that would contribute. I would do it, but I don't have the time, nor am
I
that good of a writer.
What's your favorite? We've got about 3 minutes left. What's your favorite interview question? What's your kind of your stick in the room? Somebody's pretty final in the process. What's your bit with them?
My favorite interview question is, that's a really good question. So my favorite interview question, because I am a part psychologist, or I'd like to think I am, is how would, you know, very old school, how would your, you know, previous manager describe you? How would your coworkers describe you? And then I take it to the next step and ask them how their neighbors would describe them.
Ooh.
And then ask them how their friends would describe them. And you typically get very, very different answers. And
yeah.
From a psychology, human psychology perspective, when you ask them, well, how would your neighbor, that's, to me, that's really, it's showing you how the difference, how you think, how you act, how you're going to contribute. Are you a helper? You stay to yourself? Are you, you know, it really kind of changes the dynamic. And again, I'm using some of my, you know, psychology training, very limited amateur strength, but I think it really, it kind of drives home, but it's completely subjective. You know, there's no right or wrong answer.
No, mine's everyone's misunderstood. How are you misunderstood?
That's good. I might copy that.
Well, I copied it from somebody else, so I mean, let's be honest.
There's
no new art here.
And the answer is not from your spouse or your children.
Right?
It's how are you misunderstood in your work life.
No joke. What's giving you some inspiration these days? Is there a blog that you've been following? Is there a Twitter account? Is there anything, a book that you've read? What's kind of giving you some inspiration?
You know, I'm one of those people that reads about 5 books at one time and really probably never gets to finish many of them. I think my favorite book that I read this year was Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In.
Cool.
You know, as a female who believes firmly that we can do anything a man can do, just a little feminist plug there. It was really inspirational to me personally, knowing that, you know, it's not for everybody, but it was the book that I read that I enjoyed the most this year. But I actually, before I chimed into the call today, I was looking at Brian's website and some of the speakers that he has within the CVOC team. And I have to admit, I ordered 2 books while I was online looking
very cool.
and subscribed to a new blog to be able to inspire.
I'll tell you, I disagree with you about Sheryl's book. I actually think it is for everybody. I don't think it's just for women because I scanned it myself, and I actually learned a lot about myself and kind of fails that I, mistakes that I had made, you know, in the past. And so I think it's for everybody. I think it's a mass market book, and I think it should be a mass market book because I think there's a lot of guys, you know, that could read it and garner something from it as well. So, we've got to roll out because there's only 15 seconds left. Everyone, thank you for letting us invade your ear hole today. Lisa, again, thank you. Amazing time with you today. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, and thanks again for listening to Drive Through HR. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Lisa.